Hello and welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, the Centrelink's podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@centrelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at SteveDunk5 or at EverythingCanon. Today on the show, I'm talking to Lizelle Sambury all about her incredible debut novel, Blood Like Magic, which not only has enough Toronto landmarks to throw a stick at, but is described as a rich, dark urban fantasy debut following a teen witch who was given a horrifying task, sacrificing her first love to save her family's magic. The problem is she's never been in love. She'll have to find the perfect guy before she can kill him. There's no question in my mind that Blood Like Magic is a 5-star read, but there's a little more to it than that, because it's not relevant just for the sake of relevance. By connecting the distant past to the near future, what Lizelle has done is allow us to see things that maybe we should have seen a long time ago. We talk about her connection to the Toronto writers' crew, her amazing work with the book's lead character Voya, the not-so-fair publishing industry, Blood Like Magic, of course, and much, much more. While this is a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now. But definitely double back once you've had a chance to read it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves. Each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices, this should be done all year long. I can't stress that enough. Also, June is, of course, Pride Month, so support LGBTQ plus authors any way that you can, either by boosting them online, buying their books, leaving reviews, etc. And also, that kind of support shouldn't end June 30th. Try and be an ally all year long if you can. Lizelle Sambury is a Trinidadian-Canadian author who grew up in Toronto, and her brand of writing can be described as, quote, messy black girls in fantasy situations, end quote. In her free time, she shares helpful tips for upcoming writers and details of her publishing journey through a YouTube channel dedicated to helping demystifying the sometimes complicated business of being an author. It's really cool. We'll talk about it here in a second, but check it out if you haven't. She's here today to talk about her debut novel, Blood Like Magic, which not only has enough Toronto landmarks to throw a stick at, but is described as a rich, dark urban fantasy debut following a teen witch who is given a horrifying task, sacrificing her first love to save her family's magic. The problem is she's never been in love. She'll have to find the perfect guy before she can kill him. That's such a great tagline. Is that in the book? That's not even on the book. That should be on the book somewhere.
She'll have to find the perfect guy before.
Okay. That'd be a great little thing to put on the book. For my two cents, I wrote Blood Like Magic is clearly a 5-star read, but there's a little more to it than that. It's not relevant just for the sake of relevance. This is Lizelle allowing us to see things that maybe we should have seen a long time ago. And I just noticed that this thing's only $20 right now. That's way too cheap for this book, but definitely take advantage of that price. Please welcome to the show a gorgeous Canadian author, Lizelle Sambury. Hi, Lizelle.
Hi. So happy to be on here.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. $20. That's way too cheap for this thing. I mean, it's
a special deal.
I'm not discouraging, you know, at all. Like, you know, but I don't know. Like there's a lot of, that's a good bang for your buck as far as I'm concerned. Cause like I'm holding this thing and it's big, it's thick. What are we at? Just under 500 pages, beautiful cover, beautiful layout, beautiful design. Yeah. I don't know. I'd pay way more than that for this book. how are you?
I'm good. It was funny. I saw the sale and I was like, yay, more people will buy it because it's a perfect even number.
That is an even, right. No, that's a good point. I'm not discouraging the price or anything like that. And you're right. It does make it affordable for maybe for some people who couldn't afford a $30 or $40 book for sure. I'm actually going to be getting an extra copy of this thing. So I'm going to be giving one away to somebody who needs it here around the release date. But It's a good thing that you're right. And I'm just, it's such a great book and it's so big and beautiful and this cover is fantastic. And I just, it's worth $1,000. That's all I'm doing. Anyways, you're a fellow Ontarianian. I got to ask, this is the hot topic these days. Have you been vaccinated or?
I've gotten my first shot.
Yep.
Yeah, as many of us. I think many of us are like now coming into the first shot round. And I think that's the good thing about being in a smaller town is that they were doing their little this person next and this person next. And then they were like, fine, everyone 18 plus.
Yeah.
So then I was able to get in super fast. And so I've got that shot. My arm was very sore for like 2 days. I whined about it. My boyfriend's arm wasn't sore at all. I was very annoyed.
Which one did you get?
Pfizer.
I got a Pfizer a couple of weeks ago, my first one too. And yeah, my arm was really sore for two days. And then pretty much like, you know, 7 a.m. the third day, it was completely gone. So, but it just felt like somebody like noogied me or whatever, right? Like just sort of like gave me like a quick punch or something. I don't know. But it was like, and I'd listen, if it means I can travel again, I'll take 2 days of fever and chills and whatever. Like I'm cool absolutely. With that. Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, screw your boyfriend. That's bullshit. my wife got AstraZeneca and it like knocked the wind out of her. She was very tired for a couple of days and she felt achy. I think she got off pretty good compared to some other people I've heard, but yeah, she felt like achy. And then she said she felt like she was getting her period. And then I made that bad joke. Cause remember those fucking conspiracy conservatives who were out there saying like, it'll give you your period if you get it and stuff like that. And like,
just oh God, I hadn't heard that at all.
And I'm not encouraging people to look it up. It's complete utter nonsense, obviously. And that's what I said. I was like, well, they told you that fucking weird conservative guy somewhere in Texas. He warned you. Anyways, well, that's great. I'm glad you got it. And hopefully, yeah, we'll be able to lock down here in another 10 days or something. And maybe hopefully start to get back to normal. I've been saying this too for a while, like, you know, this lockdown and everything is so funny to me how it's not regional. And I think of like some small town, like at the very northern tip of Ontario, who probably doesn't even have internet. They probably don't even have roads, but their store's locked down. The only store in town is locked down, or it's supposed to be anyways, right? Yeah. It's just a funny, just such a weird, weird deal and whatever.
Yeah.
It just, you know, and this is the part this transition is the part that always worried me more than the actual. Last year, I felt like even though not everyone followed the rules, they were clear.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of wishy-washy, so I'm a little more terrified, but anyways.
Yeah. It's just unhelpful, because really, at least where our outbreaks are happening are in workplaces, and they're still making people go to the workplace,
right.
So I'm like, we haven't fixed anything.
Right.
Like, not that many people were in stores. It was like, the breakouts are happening in workplaces. You should have paid people to stay home, but...
Right. The targets are like schools and restaurants that haven't really caused any breakouts, like not big ones anyways. So it's kind of a strange, but you know, we don't want to turn this into a political discussion, although I think we probably fall on the same side, but it is what it is. And I also like am hesitant to judge anyone based on something that happens every 100 years. I mean, Lord knows what I would be doing, but anyways. Well, that's great. Glad to hear you got vaccination. Let's hopefully we all get our second doses by the end of the summer. That's kind of what I'm hearing. So that would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then ride it out for a few more months, and then we can start thinking about maybe traveling again. So that would be pretty awesome. Yeah. But my big thing is conventions too. I love going to conventions. So it's my favorite thing in the world. And it's literally going to be like the next time I'm on like at the Javits Center in New York or for one of the big conventions that I go to every year or used to, I'm going to walk in and probably just like kneel and kiss the floor. as gross as that's, you know, like when you find land, right? After being at sea, they kiss the sand or whatever. That'll be me at the next convention I go to. I'm just going to kiss the dirty, gross floor.
Yeah. I was talking to Ashley Shuttleworth.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how like, Anime North is supposed to be this weekend and they go every year and right. Now it's like, I guess I'm not gonna go, and I haven't been to that convention in years, but I was like, I would go instantly if right. I could and it was safe just to go somewhere.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah, they're great. I absolutely love Dark Holostar. I talked to them early when it came out, and it was such a great conversation, and I love that book so much. Another Toronto landmark filled extravaganza, which is so great. You know, it's nice to be able to, like, we'll talk about it, but being able to recognize the landmarks and everything is so much fun. So one of the you know, we'll mention it quickly. One of the things that you do with your vlogging, you know, this sort of concept of, you know, hashtag writing community, right? Mm-hmm. And God, I love it when authors help other authors. I get such a kick out of it. I think it's so cool. And it's so important, especially, for the BIPOC and the LGBTQ authors, right, to mm-hmm. help each other out, because clearly the industry isn't keen on helping them so much.
Yeah.
So it's a must. Your vlogs are a must see, I think, for anyone breaking into the industry or hoping to break into the industry. It's so great. And one of the things you do have is this the TWC, the Toronto Writers Crew, and Canadian authors this year are killing it. I just love it. It's so great. There's been so many great books so far, and there's more to come from even just like Toronto GTA types. It's been so great. How important is it to have that community, for you as a creative person and a person of color as well? And second question is, can I come the next time you all get together? It's all my favorite people. I was talking to Sasha and Serena yesterday, and I was just like, can I hang out with you guys? Or is that too, yeah.
You should come. It's honestly such an awesome community. I was looking for critique partners for Blood Like Magic early on in the process, and Fallon De Mornay, who just announced that she's having a book come out in 2022, the Stiletto Sisterhood, for Wattpad Books. So excited for her. But she CP'd for me, and she loved the book, and she was like, hey, we have this group, you should come and like join. And I had already kind of known Sasha and Serena from my book blogger days.
Yeah.
And then just got involved in this community, and it's so awesome. Like, it's nice to be able to meet people and like have that in common factor of, being from Canada and like having some connection to Toronto, because not all of us are in Toronto all the time or even necessarily from Toronto, but we can get there,
right,
to hang out and that sort of thing. And it's been really nice just to have that community. And when we could meet in person, we would go to like book launches for other Canadian authors or go to book launches together and just like go hang out every once in a while. And that was so fun, just to be able to talk to people that know about the industry and know what you're going through, like, because your average friend usually aren't really doing that, and a lot of my friends aren't readers either. And so it's also nice to be able to talk books and talk about all the books that are coming up and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And it's so funny because when I joined, it was like, I think like two people in the group had agents, and like two people, or like one person, Kelly Powell, the author of Songs from the Deep and A Magic, Dark and Strange, she had just gotten her book deal. And I think she was the only one of us that had a book deal at that time. And then throughout time, it's wild, like people getting agents and getting book deals. And this year, like, so many of us were debuting, Danielle and me and Sasha and Serena and Ashley and June having another book and Kelly having another book. And it's kind of wild how that just ended up happening. So it's like also nice to have that group, like, to celebrate with each other and to celebrate each other's wins and like commiserate, when people are on submission and having a hard time, or querying and having a hard time. Having that support just means so much.
It's tough. Like, I'm an atheist, but it's hard not to like believe in, magic and stuff. This group gets together and then you're all, coming into your own at the same time. It's the energy that's involved for that to happen. It's right. It's pretty fucking cool, to think about. And, it's so awesome. And it must, and then now there's a pandemic, and I know you haven't been together in a while physically. Right. So like, it's just, I was joking. I'm not going to intrude on your beautiful personal club, but, although I wouldn't turn down an invitation. I'm so happy for you for the next time you all get together, because by then, yeah, books will have come out and debuts. And, that's one thing debut authors are getting to miss out on right now with the pandemic, right? Is in-person events and all these, mm-hmm. these cool things that come along with being a debut author. Cause you never get that back, right? You never get your first one back, but, I'm not trying to press you, but just a fact of life. But, the next time you all have to get together, it'll be emotional for more reasons than before, not just friendship and kinship and found family and these great you know, personal things you guys have all been through, but you're coming back together like fucking like conquering heroes in a way. You know what I mean? Like just, yeah. we've destroyed the colonists. Now let's celebrate, you know, like, I mean, obviously that is, but you know what I mean? I just, yeah. Such a great thing. And I just, whenever that happens, I just, I know it'll be so great. And at least document it for me. If you could do that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be wild. I'm sure we'll suddenly, there will be a sudden explosion of like events altogether just happening.
It's too much power for once. Yeah. The earth will explode. It's too much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also too, when, you know, after this book comes out and you're going to be gigantic superstar author, I want you to somehow use your sway to get your werewolf book out into the world. Can you do that for me? Because I love werewolves.
Oh my god.
And I want
it's funny, actually. I ended up like, I pulled the character, I just yanked my favorite characters from a werewolf book and I just threw them into plans for another book. So I've already like torn it apart, but I'm gonna they will be recreated and it'll be a different sort of thing. But that's my long-term plans. That's a book that
you're gonna just
my dark academia book, I call it. I'm gonna set it in Kingston where I went to school, so that's gonna be a long project.
So you're just gonna you're really good, just sort of data mine it more than just then sort of bring it back into the fold. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it'll be, there will be a beast element.
Okay,
it probably won't be werewolf.
Understood. I've talked to other debuts and they're just, you know, the process is such an interesting part to me. I actually think art is process. Once the book is made, it's just a product. Like I can throw it away, I can step on it, I can, you know, burn it. But you know, it's at that process, I can't take that away from you. That's special and unique to you, right? And so I've talked to authors who talk about sort of, you know, the querying years and the rejection years. And some of them have said, they're like, you know, they're still in love with some of those stories that got rejected and would, you know, love one day to have them see the light of day. And I said, well, listen, when you're a huge selling author, you get to do whatever you want. So like, I said, don't throw those outlines out. Hold on to those outlines.
I never throw anything away. I keep all of my files religiously. Some authors were talking about, they were like, do you save your files after the book is published? And I was like, you wouldn't save the files?
Yeah, why would you throw that out?
But I guess because it's done and you're not going to edit it more and you already have the book in book form, so I guess they're thinking, why do you need everything?
I know, but I mean, like, I've seen things where, you know, well-established authors have like gone back to pull back some of that stuff, and it's sort of a nice moment to go back and see just what type of writer you were, if, you know, if you've maybe changed, you know, a lot since then. And I don't know, I'd hang on to it. I'm the type that would hang on to it. I'm the same as you. Yeah.
It's data. It's very small. It's a couple megabytes.
Yeah. Like, right. I mean, it's not like it's yeah. I'm with you. So like I said, I really, really love and appreciate all the Toronto references and Blood Like Magic. It's always great when you get to read a book and understand all the reference points or the places of interest. Was that fun for you getting to, because, you know, again, with Ashley's book too, we got a ton, and Luisa's book too, right? So there's so many, and it's great finally reading a story, you know, not finally, there's been a few before, but not a lot. Where I can recognize those places, because either I've just been to most of them, right? Like, or in your case, in your book, like I used to go to Caravana all the time, right? So was that a lot of fun for you, filling this book with those? And like, what did you ever tell yourself, like, I got to like ease up a bit, or?
Absolutely not. Never.
No, good. Good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think because, you know, I read so much urban fantasy growing up and I always loved that idea of being able to recognize places, but like almost all the urban fantasy I was reading was set in New York, and like,
right,
I'd been to New York like the smallest amount of times, and so unless it was like the Met or like something really obvious, yeah, I wasn't gonna know it. And so I loved the idea of like having, you know, a fantasy book in Toronto where you could see all those landmarks, because I don't often see it happen, especially in fantasy. So it's super exciting. It's super fun for me to put in all those places. A lot of those places I have, you know, my own personal history with. And so it's really nice to see them there in the book. And then, you know, in the sequel, I just put in even more. And then I continue to set books in Toronto, so I get to do it all the time.
Awesome. No, that's great. And like I said, it's so much fun for people, you know, who have any knowledge of Toronto or Ontario or even Canada. You know, it's nice to have, you know, somebody on our side giving us these wonderful landmarks, because I don't necessarily know if I think it's a great film, but like something like Scott Pilgrim, it's just so much fun. I love rewatching it because all the places they go to in that movie I've been to a million times. Right. Yeah. So it's kind of, I'm in the middle on it. I think there's so many things I love about it, and there's some things I don't love about it, but I do love his vegan representation. I am vegan, so it's, I appreciate the vegan representation. Okay. So I'm going to go on a little, like a 10 second rant here. So just bear with me. Mm-hmm. So like I said, I was talking to the beautiful anonymous sisters, Serena and Sasha, yesterday, and I just told them how attracted I am to Gaul, right? Like the will to act. And at the beginning of Blood Like Magic, you wrote, quote, "To black girls everywhere, you can be more than a slave or a lesson for someone else. You deserve to be a witch or a dragon hunter, to fall in love with a vampire or lead your friends against a villain. You are more than the best friend or sassy comedic relief. You are the hero," end quote. So this idea that if you don't see yourself in the books you're reading and the industry isn't coming to you, you go to them and you kick the door down. So if you can't find a book with you on the cover or portrayed as the hero, you fucking write it. And I love that. And I love that courage to do that. And since so much of your history, I'm talking about Black history, was stolen, erased, eradicated, thanks to us amazing white people, it's up to you to either fill in some blanks or just to straight up fictionalize it, isn't it? And you know, that's such an important part of the story. Talk to me about that a little bit, because I thought that was a really beautiful sentiment that you wrote in the book.
Yeah. So my big thing with Blood Like Magic is when I was growing up and reading all those amazing fantasy books, you know, I wasn't in them. Or right. If I was in them, I was a sassy best friend or a slave. And otherwise, there was no representation. I still enjoyed the books for what they were, but it's also still difficult to, you know, when you're represented as a character, you're that or you die or any of those things. You don't get to be the person that's the hero and that falls in love and that does all of those things, or you slay the dragon, or you are the person who the book is about, and it's a positive portrayal. And so I really wanted to see that book out in the world. When I read The Bells by Donald Clayton, that was when I was like, oh, we can do it, actually. Because I think in publishing, there's that issue of the single narrative, mm-hmm. of, you know, kind of this push of Black pain stories, which are important and relevant, but should also have space for Black joy stories and fantasy stories. And I wasn't sure there was space for that even as I was writing it. But seeing The Bell succeed really let me know, you know what, there is space for that. And now there's so many, which is great. I'm so excited for teens today to have that. But that was really what I wanted to contribute to. I wanted to be another book that, you know, with a Black girl on the cover, who is magical and is dealing with the same sort of magic issues. And certainly because she's Black, you know, there are things that play into her race. That's how she lives her life. But it's not the crux of the story. And I really just love the idea of someone being able to just say, like, this is an amazing urban fantasy that I love. And for Black kids and Black girls to be like, and I'm the one in it.
And here's a little secret I'm going to let everyone in on, is that you guys do it better than anyone else. And I don't know if this is because you've just been ignored for so long and you've been sitting on all these great, you know, ideas. And now, like you said, thanks to Danielle, who still doesn't get enough credit, by the way, for what she did with The Bells. I don't know if you just like it, just the dams, the floodgates are open now. I don't know what, you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of reasons probably, but somebody asked me the other day, they're like, do you only read books by Black authors or LGBTQ plus authors? Because that's like, those are all your favorite books. I'm like, no, I don't. They're just the best fucking books. It's like, I'm sorry, I can't help it. Like, it's not my fault. Just back to the original idea of, like, you know, if the industry is not going to come to you, you go to the industry. And I just think that's so great. And I'm just so in love with so many of the books by, you know, yourself and all your friends that are making, like, the storytelling is just so great. And it depresses me a little bit, because then I start to think about all the great stories we never got to see because of the system, right?
Yeah.
That
never. Because that's, I think, the big thing, right? Like, I think the quality is high because you had to make the quality so high to get in the door, right?
To get it in front of somebody, yeah.
That much more.
Yeah.
So then we're all, like, taking it to, you know, 150 to try and get that foot in. I think that really makes a difference for sure.
So we'll know there's true quality when you start releasing a bunch of shitty books.
Yeah, that's what I think. I honestly say that to people.
Yeah.
When we can release mediocrity and get giant deals anyway, I'm like, that's when
we're finally there. I've said that about, like, female-led superhero films. I'm like, it's not, people are like, well, we're finally, like, we're there. I'm like, because we had, like, what, Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel. I'm like, no, we're not there. When a female-led superhero film comes out and isn't expected to be the greatest movie ever made, when it's just shitty and everyone's okay with that, then we're there.
Yeah. When you're like, I don't know, maybe I'll watch it, maybe I won't. I'll watch the other one when it comes out.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Because you know there's more coming. We just don't, I mean, I guess we're kind of getting there, and there's still, you know, white but so same thing with publishing. When Lizelle Sanbury book gets one star, then there's reason to celebrate. Anyways, I'm thankful for so many reasons for all these great stories, because they are so fucking great. But yeah, it does sort of bum me out a little thinking about all the stories that we never got to read because it's because of racism. Blood Like Magic. The summary's kind of long, Lizelle. Do you want to practice your, you know, you're going to get asked this every single time, right? So what?
Oh, I'm like, just do my pitch.
Yeah. Your elevator version. Do you want to do that? Or do you want me to just
do the summary? Do that.
Okay.
Mine is short. So, okay.
All right, do it.
So Blood Like Magic is about a family of black witches living in a near future Toronto, and in particular, 16-year-old Voya Thomas, who is given the impossible task of either killing her first love or losing her family's magic forever.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I just do that full stop. That's usually enough for people.
Were you reading that, or do you have that memorized yet?
Oh, I have it memorized.
Yes, nice work. Yeah, because that's like one of the five you're going to get, right? You know, you've done enough of these or watched enough, and, you know, what's the book about? What inspired
you? Even from YouTube, right? Like,
I'm going to interview my book
when I'm doing video.
And they're not bad questions. Of course, we should know what the book is about, but, you know, it's just, I think it's too often we focus on something that I can just easily Google, right?
Yeah.
So, where I'd rather ask, what did you do today? I think I said to you off air, I've said it already on this show, I fucking love this book so much. I think it's so great. I've read it a couple of times now, cover to cover, and I'm just holding it, and it's so beautiful. I love the cover. The detail on Voya is so great. You must have been so happy when you saw this cover, I assume.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Like,
who's the artist?
Thea Harvey.
Okay.
Is the illustrator, and Rebecca Sarah Cruz did the cover design.
Okay. People are surprised when they realize you actually don't. Authors have very little to do with the covers, but sometimes they do. Did you have anything to do with the cover?
So my editor confirmed Voya's hair texture with me.
Right, which is beautiful on the cover, by the way.
Yeah, she did such a great job. Like, the detail and all of the curls is so perfect, and the way the light bounces.
The lighting on it, right? Yeah, is like, I'm looking at this thing and I'm just like, like you can, I need a, like you could, and the bigger, if you can get yourself on a really high quality image and zoom in the hair, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the closer you get, the more.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Girl. It's amazing. Yeah. It's gorgeous. Yeah. So I really love this book so much. And there are tons of reasons why. We obviously can't go into most of them because of spoilers, but you know, there might be magic in this book, Lizelle, for real, but like the real fucking magic is having a main character who has difficulty with decision-making, who is constantly having to make decisions, remain yeah. not only active in the narrative, but somehow doesn't slow the story down like one bit. And it doesn't, it never once makes me want to throw the book out the window. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Is there anything more frustrating than indecision from a main character? I mean, that creates conflict, that creates drama. That's writing, that's storytelling. And it's great especially when it's done well, but it's frustrating as a reader sometimes. Right. Just talk about Voya for a second. And like that idea behind that, because I mean, that is the book in a lot of ways. And she's such a great, strong main character, but for, like I just said, like how you were able to have this person who by design not only doesn't like to make decisions, but isn't any good at it, have to constantly make, and not just to sit, not like what am I going to eat today, which is true in some cases in the book actually, or what I'm going to cook maybe more specifically, but or bake, but like life and death decisions. Yeah. Like, yeah. So talk to me about Voya. Talk to me about actually what came first, the story or Voya?
So the story came first, and then the story in that I wanted a book about Black witches set in a future Toronto. And then I was like, who is the girl? And I had this image of a girl in a bath of blood. And that was where I started. And I was like, well, why is she there? And like kind of springboarded off of that and went into creating Voya's character. And I am like, I'm indecisive for non-important things, for like things that really don't matter. Like I'm the person that stands in the aisle at the grocery store and I'll look at two boxes of like something that'll be like no name or brand name, and I'll agonize over what I want to do. and so I basically just like pump that up super high in her, but for all decisions. But it was difficult. Like when I first wrote Voya, I had trouble kind of figuring out how her voice was going to be. And she was initially quite passive, which was the difficulty because she doesn't like making decisions. So then she was very passive because she was letting other people do a lot of the decision making for her. And then through drafts, I figured out ways to make her more active. So I made it like, she's bad at making decisions for herself, but she's quite good at making decisions for other people and for their lives and figuring out what they want to do and like guiding them. I also made it so her family refused to help her make decisions at this time, despite the fact that's something they've basically done her whole life. They've always kind of catered to the fact that she struggles with this and tried to make things easier for her. There is that scene in the book where she's talking about, you know, she had to decide between two lunch items and she like cried because she couldn't figure it out. Yeah. And so her mom started making decisions easier for her. Right. And there's even a point in the book where Luke tries to do that for her. And she's now at this point in her life where people are like, no, we can't do this for you. And the whole crux of the book, you know, the ancestor gives you a task and you have to make a choice. And hers is very different than it's supposed to be. And it just makes the choices even harder. And so she's just tortured for the whole book.
She is.
Yeah. She's made to do all this decision making that she's avoided for so long. And in some cases avoided because she's kind of been told that her life is going to go a certain way as well. So that was like, it was definitely difficult. I got to the point where I was in edits with my editor and the publisher, and I was like, yeah, I have her motivation wrong. This isn't her motivation. This isn't her goal. And I changed it and I did all these fixes to align it properly. So when people are like, what's the most difficult character to write? I say Voya, because I had to do so much work to get her to exactly how I wanted her to be and like what made sense. And, you know, when I dove into wrote the sequel, it was like, a well-oiled machine because I spent so much time trying to get her exactly in that space. Because it is really difficult if you have a character that doesn't like to make decisions to not have them be passive. So yeah, that was definitely a challenge.
Well, you found the magic because I didn't once want to throw the book away out of frustration. So that's a pretty good sign, I think, indicator that you did your job well. Three things there really quick for what you just said. Yeah, the something about, you know, there's something about bathing in a bath of blood is one of the best opening lines this year. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, and talking about sort of like her family not having her back, there's a chapter 22, The Truth, is sort of like the emotional anchor of the book in a lot of ways. And that's when somebody, I guess I'll just say Alex, I think we're allowed to say that, sort of steps up and calls the whole family out on just that point, right? That they're not helping her. In fact, they're making it worse. And that's that's one of my favorite chapters. Lizelle was chapter 22. It was so great and so strong. Yeah.
I love Alex.
Alex is my, like, the cousins. Whew. Like, there's your, give me that series. Where's that? You know, assuming book two goes a certain way. I don't know if you believe in happy endings or not, but, you know, the cousins are so fully formed and beautiful. And then the third point, the answer to that question, who is the hardest to write? I think it should always be the main character, because the book, whether it's a series or standalone, lives and dies on the shoulders of that person.
Yeah.
That should always be the answer, in my opinion. And it's not to say, you know, things won't come easier or more naturally to you because maybe you identify with the main character a little bit more than others or for whatever reason. But I think that should always be the answer to that question. But and that's why you're the author, and that's why I talk to authors, right? But yeah, Voya, it's such a, one thing that dawned on me too, like it must be so hard always expecting the worst thing to happen, you know, like what a shitty way to live, go through life in a lot of ways, isn't it, right? Like,
yeah.
And you know, you do such a great job of establishing early on to her that her family is, like, this thing is about family for sure, right? Like, it's family is the most important part of this book. It's the most important thing to Voya for sure. And that she would do anything to keep them together, to save them, to make their life better if she could, right? Within, you know, legal, I guess, reasons. But so you have someone who's, you know, wields a decision like a sword, you know, so you establish very early on that she's a very hard time making decisions for herself. So something for her to kill somebody, something very important would have to be at risk. I don't know if we're allowed to say what, but maybe we won't for now. But talk about, like, if you can, without the spoiler aspect of this question, because you must have thought of that. What would it take to get her to have to make a decision? And it's not like where to cross the street. It's to kill the first person she loves or the first person she's in love with.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the big thing, because it had, and that changed a few times. I won't say how.
Right. It's tough. So, I know that's a tough question to answer without.
But it changed a few times. But yeah, essentially the crux of it was, what is so important that she would risk this? And the answer is always family for her.
Yeah.
I don't think that's spoilery. No. And so that was really the big thing, was making sure that those stakes matched up. And that was something, I feel like that was something that came in to agent edits, but I truly can't remember all the versions blend together. But to me, the big thing was the motivation. And even if she was going to agonize over the decision, she was going to have the motivation to go through the process of agonizing over it. And to really weigh those choices. And then the thing that, you know, helps in the book is that she still can't make the choice until she falls in love with this person. So she is kind of naturally given time to procrastinate, which of course she does because she's not good at them. But yeah, the stakes were really important, especially because it's like the big selling point, crux of the book is this horrific decision.
They
And
got to
so
be
that's
high
what
and
drew
they
a
got to
lot
be
of it.
believable, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the first thing some fucking asshole on Goodreads is going to do is like, nah, this wouldn't happen. You're just
Right.
like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not believable, right? So, like,
Yeah.
and not that you owe them anything or answer to them at all. Of course not. But you know what I mean? Like, you know yourself as a storyteller. Like, this has to make sense and it has to be believable and the stakes have to be high because you spend a good amount of time at the beginning establishing. Again, how hard it is for to make any decision, let alone something as serious as murdering somebody, right? So,
Yeah.
yeah. So, I think you did a like I you did that to me as far. I think you succeeded at that for sure, to be honest with you. And it's a struggle for her through the whole book. And yeah, like the family is back and forth on, you know, whether they're helping her or not. We'll let the readers decide. But, you know, I think they think they are, but I don't, right? So a lot of this, yeah, Toronto, a lot of Toronto landmarks for sure. A lot of traveling around, doing some fun stuff and some not so fun stuff. But a lot of this takes place in the family home, right? This big old beautiful house that doesn't have a working stove and I could just imagine it. It's probably I picture it. It's the house from What They Do in the Shadows from the TV
Oh,
show. Yeah. Which they film in
yeah.
Toronto. Which they film in Toronto.
I didn't know that.
And so it's just not, it's not to say it's not haunted to say, but I mean
Yeah.
you get the aesthetic idea I'm going for. But anyway, so because so much of the story takes place in the house and the entire family lives in this house pretty much, minus an uncle or two, it's important that every character be established or at least three dimensional because they're there. You can't have them all live in the same house and then sort of just like casually make reference to somebody sitting in the corner,
Yeah.
right? Because you just can't because you're there. So much of it takes place there, and I thought that was brilliant what you did with this cast because you get a sense of who they all are very early on, and they all sort of go on have little arcs of their own. Some you managed to squeeze that in a great way, but the cousins, Keys, Keisha, and Alex. Unbelievably strong and each different in their own way, each great in their own way and shitty in their own way. And they're just so like three-dimensional and real. Talk about them because I mean that's her sisters, right? Like
Yeah.
that's her base. That's her these three are her rock. They're her cheering squad. They're her biggest you know the people who maybe criticize her the most too in a way, right? Like just, but only because they want her to be strong and great, but they give her a hard time, right? About her
Yeah.
inability to make a decision.
Yeah, I love family that are also like friends. Like, I just think that's so fun. I really love that close-knit aspect.
Yeah. Do you have
I've
that in
never
your own life? 'Cause I don't. Like
I
I don't even
no
know my extended family. Like I don't even know them. Yeah.
well, in my family we all lived in one house and there were eight of us, and
Okay.
so I grew up with my three cousins, but they were significantly older than me, so they
Okay.
were like they had like 10, 12 years on me. And so we had a different sort of relationship. It was like a very elder sibling type relationship, and that, you know, my male cousins would pick on me and like sometimes bring me to stuff, and they'd take me to the kids' movies they wanted to see that they were embarrassed to go to by themselves. And my girl cousin would like, you know, she was the one that would like take me to like fairs and stuff that my mom didn't want to go, and like we would go and do that together instead. And that was really fun. It was like having very elder siblings.
Right.
Whereas when I created these sibling relationships, I made them quite close in age
Right.
so that I could have like a stronger, it is like very much like a sibling bond, which I always liked. And especially for Voya, who had in some ways is like quite a bit isolated. They have this family beauty supply business, and she's always really focused on that. She doesn't have very many friends outside of her family, but that's because the Black Witch community is like this giant family. And so that's where she was getting her friends. And for reasons that happened later in the book, that kind of dissolves in a way, and she ends up being extra super close to the people in her family that are left and her cousins. And I had so much fun doing the cousins. I just think it's true, they are really everything to Voya. They are her friends, they are her sisters, they are also the biggest critiquers because they're the ones that really know the most about her. And Case in particular is like her best friend, and she is like they're attached to the hip. She can literally read her mind. And in fact, because she can't control her powers, has been chilling in her mind for the better part of a year since she got her gift, and so knows her even more intimately than the others. And I just like this idea of them orbiting around each other because they're all like each other's closest friends. And figuring out, like, I really had to develop everyone in the family in layers. So I started out with a base of how the characters were. I knew that Keisha was a little bit spunky and like, you know, she's the one that does modeling. And so she's always, you know, she's got like the nicest wigs and like her nails are always done. Alex is really into fashion, but she's very serious about it. She's very career oriented in a way that Keisha is very flippant. And Case is very academic focused, but rejecting of magic in a way that Alex isn't. So they all kind of have these like sorts of complements as well. And then things got built up over time. Like their arcs really developed over several drafts. And there was a point, also, I can't remember if it was with my editor or my agent, but I think it was my editor. And she was like, okay, we need to figure out exactly what each family member thinks of Voya, what they think of what she's doing with this task, what they want her to do. And we need to decide that so we can see those happening throughout the narrative. And so then I literally made a list and I said, this is what each person thinks of Voya, this is what they think she should do. And then it was a lot easier to really tweak their behavior. And it's nice because, you know, there's 11 people in this house and not everyone agrees with what they think she should be doing. And not everyone is the same level of pushy or the same level of like hands off with her. And everyone has their own sort of stake in how the outcome will come out at the end of this. Depending on whether or not she quote unquote succeeds, in their definition of what succeeding would be.
Right. And the interesting thing about that is they're all sort of limited in what they can do or say because there's a matriarch in the house, right? So, each coven, each clan sort of has somebody who's in charge. And, like as much as, the cousins want to do more, there's rules, right?
Well, because because Granny is in some way dictating what they are going to do. So if she says, as matriarch, we're going to leave Voya alone, then they have to leave her
Right,
alone,
right.
even if they would rather. And sometimes some of them are sneaky and they will sneak in little things. Keisha is big for being sneaky and she'll kind of say what she
He's
wants,
just so
even though
great.
she's not supposed to.
It's
But then, yeah, and then on top of that, Mama Jova is the ancestor who is presiding over Voya's whole coming of age. So she is also exerting her own pressure
right.
over how this is being handled.
What's I just there was a I sort of like had something in common with each cousin, which I thought was really cool. Like I'm very demi-romantic and stuff like that. So it was like right away as with Keisha and like, but I also have like a lot of empathy for other people. That's why I'm like a low-grade narcissist because I care more about people I've never even met more than my own family. So like I can relate to with Keisha a little bit as being able to like she's very empathetic. Now that's a lot of it's because of her gift, right? But Alex is so just strong and courageous and she's so great. And it's like as that not that I have that in common. That's I don't have that, which attracts me to Alex, right? As someone who is someone who isn't courageous. I like, I'm like, Alex is really cool. Anyway, just top to bottom, great character work. And you do something to one of them, which I'll never forgive you for, but we can't talk about that because that's way too spoilery and is everything, has everything to do with this book and what Voya is doing. So we can't even go near it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And everyone else will when they read the book. And if you don't fix that for book two, I'm never talking to you again. That's not true. Just from a representation standpoint, you know, you check the boxes without checking boxes. You know what I mean? Like it's so natural and so great the way you have representation in this book, and it just feels so natural, and it feels like the way it should be, right? How it should be discussed, as in not at all, as in just I am who I am, and everyone accepts that. And God, that sounds great, doesn't it? You know, that doesn't extend necessarily outside of the home in this case, right? But it's a nice, really beautiful, beautiful message there for sure. I want to talk about the tech real quick before we go. Because it does take place in the future. Some of it feels out there, but a lot of it just feels really tactile to me. Like it's Black Mirror-esque in a way, but your ideas, they're science fiction, I guess, but some of them feel like they're already out there, like especially like the matchmaking stuff, right? The algorithms and all that with New Gene and stuff. But there's some stuff that's like, feels like it's just out of reach. Like we're going to have it any day now. Just talk about that, because I really loved some of the concepts in this book as far as the technology and the AI and some of the more science fiction-y stuff goes.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's not hard. It's soft sci-fi in a way, I guess, but and that can run away on you. That can take over the narrative in a real quick way, right? Because it's like you need to maintain that humanity, but infuse the story with like this artificial sense at the same time. And that can, I've seen people lose control of that. You didn't, you grabbed a hold of this sucker by the throat and controlled it from start to finish. So it was a really great job on that.
Yeah, thank you. The thing about the tech is I pushed it into the future, but I didn't push it that far into the future. Originally, I actually had it farther. I had it 100 years, and then I chatted with my editor about some of the tech, and we were like, okay, actually, no, 50 years. So it's about 50-ish years in the future. And so to me, all the tech was about giving it a nudge. And the biggest nudge that I gave was that development of genetic manipulation, which is that they can alter your genes basically however they would like, with immediate expressive effects. So, you know, they can change your eye color, they can change your hair color, they can cure genetic diseases, etc. And so that was the big leap. And then everything else was just like a little nudge. So a lot of things that I looked up were things that were kind of almost there, but we don't have it yet. Like the self-driving cars, we have self-driving cars, but they're not mass available to everyone such that everyone is using them.
And they're still getting in accidents. Did you hear about that one in the States, the guy, the Tesla crashed, it was on autopilot or whatever, and both people were in the back seat.
Of course.
And I was like, but I read that's not even possible. Like there's a safety thing in place for like somebody has to be in the front seat to autopilot. That's like, that's built in. But then I also read that apparently if you just like, it's not like a weight sensor. It's just like a laser or something. So people just like hang something there, even just like an air freshener or something. And as long as the laser thinks something's there, then it auto drives. Isn't that fucking crazy?
Yeah. They're tricky. The decisions that people make this is why Darwin Awards exist, but like people do things they're very much not supposed to do, right. But yeah, that's the thing, right? Like we can't handle self-driving cars even when we have them, but this is like, okay, we nudge it this many years, and this is what we can make happen. And sometimes it's like, you know, things that are like quite, you know, nice and good, like good to have self-driving cars that, you know, pay attention, though I guess if you're an Uber driver, maybe less good. And some things are like kind of like it feels like progress, but it's not quite. I talk some about police brutality and the fact that now, you know, when an officer shoots a Black person, they're gonna get charged with murder right away. But you know, almost always dropped a degree. And then it doesn't change the fact that people are still getting shot in the first place,
Yeah.
even though there's
We're
consequences.
actually going to get to that quote in a second.
Yeah.
You're stealing my thunder, but that's all right.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And so it was really, yeah, all of those little nudges into the future, while still kind of maintaining other things. Because my thing about it is it's the future, but we're not super great. I think when you think of jumping 50 years into the future, you think of something that's very radically different, but it's not necessarily. And so a lot of things were, yeah, seeing what we have today and really shooting it far into the future. I also talk about gender affirming surgery, and the process that I talk about in the book. They're already doing that with mice. And so I just shot it into the future and like, now you can do it with humans. And so that's what a lot of the research and how the tech was developed was, is I would think of what we already had and I would think of how we could get into the future. And even though they have like little chips that are like connected to their brains and they can see text messages and stuff, I actually don't even think that's that wild considering that we're wearing all of our tech right now anyway. And like 50 years ago, to have your phone be like basically a full computer was wild. And now here it is. So it was
Right.
a fine balance in deciding what was like just future enough and what kind of wasn't.
Especially if you want to keep it realistic, it's not the right word, but somewhat. We'll
Soft.
just, yeah, because people always say to me, like, imagine you took an iPhone back to 1978. I'm like, they wouldn't get it. It's too much of a leap, right? Like, there's
Yeah.
too many, it took too many steps to get to the iPhone. So that they wouldn't understand the internet, let alone an iPhone. Like, it would just be like a weird magic gizmo to them, right? It wouldn't make any sense to them. So you can't, yeah. So, like, it's smart not to go too far ahead if you're still trying to make it, because you're the book isn't, because it's in the future, you can't necessarily, you can't call it contemporary, but it kind of is in a lot of ways, right? Like,
Yeah.
it's a very, it's still a very recognizable world.
Yeah. And it's imperfect. Like,
Right.
she, you can see your text message through your chip thing, but she still has to like look at her phone and like give it a command to take a picture and stuff like that. Like, it's
Right.
not fully in her head. They're still using, they're using drones, but they're using them more widely. It's, yeah, very
Yeah.
fine balance.
I was talking to SB Divya earlier in the year about Machinehood. Great book if you haven't read that yet. But she considers us already augmented because with our because of iPhones. And because she's like, when's the last time you saw somebody where they didn't have their phone in their hand? Right?
Yeah.
It's already become a part of us. Like, it's attached to your hand, or it's in your pocket. It's never like not on your skin in some way. So she's like, we're already augmented. It's way too late.
Yeah, it's just inconvenient,
Right,
obviously, because you still have to hold it. You can still lose it and drop
exactly.
it. And
And
like,
when it is more than like a foot away from you, you start to fucking panic, right?
yeah, we're
So.
all buying 10-foot charging cords because we want to still use the phone.
Right. Ex yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Or even the wireless charging thing now. And anyways, it's fucking scary, isn't it? So yeah, we'll get you out of here in a few minutes. But yeah, the quote you were talking about a second ago, there are consequences to killing us now that there haven't been always been, but they still can't stop themselves from taking that shot. Now, obviously, you wrote that before the George Floyd verdict came in.
Yes.
And so, could you imagine how relevant that line would be, right? Because it's so true. It
Yeah.
like, but at the same time, it also took the entire government, the entire weight of the justice system to convict a man who was clearly fucking guilty, like on video guilty.
Yeah.
But it still
Oh,
took the entire weight of the government to convict this guy. And I'm not convinced anything's changed. Are you?
no, well, it's a one person thing, right?
Yeah,
So
right. But like,
it
that's.
feels like my one black friend. You haven't fixed anything. You've done one thing for one person.
And that's one thing you emphasize in this book. It's like the future and things are great and maybe things are a little better, but there's a big but in your book, isn't
Yeah.
there? Yeah. That sounded bad. There isn't a big but in your book.
Sorry.
I'm not, you know,
I mean, technically, I do talk about boy having a big
Voya does
butt,
reference herself as having I'm like, no, it's beautiful. Shavoya is gorgeous. I don't.
Yeah, she's very happy.
Absolutely. Like, I don't. Yeah, I'm not. This is not. This is. Man, this went. That could.
This is a tangent.
This has gone bad. Voya is gorgeous, and but she does refer to like, you know, have trouble. What did she say? Like, there's one line that's actually it's pretty funny. She calls herself out on it, right? So it's there's a funny line about squeezing into something. But anyways, it's good. But yes, there's a big, you know, thing, you know, in this book about, yeah, things are a little better, but cops are still fucking, will take a shot at us if they can.
Yeah, absolutely.
At black people we're talking about. So,
yeah. And that line too, that line itself was written during the time that all the protests were going in. I added in that line.
Okay, right.
Because it, you know, everything plot wise like that had already happened,
which itself was a trial in a way, right? Like, yeah. That was, you know, that was the protests were pissed off people, mostly black people, justifiably, that was them presenting their case in a lot of ways, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then yeah, that line just felt salient in imagining that future and what I had already kind of written in, and thinking about that, and that was the line I had added.
Yeah.
At that time, I think I was in like farther along, either line edits or copy edits, and I shoved it right in there.
Yeah, good. No, it's a great line. There's a ton of great lines in this book. There's another really great one about the value you put on life, on it, meaning life, ruining or improving it is subjective. Mm-hmm. Really great line. Or thought, I remember like kind of, I don't know if I closed the book, but I stepped away from it for a second. Really, that's courtesy of Mama Jova. Mm-hmm. Really thought about that one for a while. Really cool. Really interesting, because we don't want it to be subjective, do we, in a way, right?
Yeah.
Because it's everything's supposed to be, it's my life. It's personal.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
But people understand that there's context, you know, to that, yeah, line, obviously, but you can take that away from the story, even think about it for a second. And it's a really cool thing to wrap your head around. And I suggest people don't do it at like 2 a.m. like I did. And I think I was high as well at the time. I either just smoked pot or ate mushrooms or something. And I was thinking about it and I was just like, whoa, what if it is subjective? And I'm just like, no.
Thanks.
Great line though. It did make me, I honestly, no joking aside, I'd sit on that one for a long time. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. This might as well be 100 years from now, but it just sounds so cool. I want you to just sort of give me a really quick thing about Butcher Birds, if you can. Talk to me about
I'm
that.
I'm happy to do that. So Butcher Birds is my 2023 release. I had to remember the date.
It's so weird. So I typed that out. It's so weird seeing 2023, right? Because it just feels so, it's the future. It just feels so far away.
It is the future. But yeah, Butcher Birds, I wrote, I want to say 2019 NaNoWriMo. But it's essentially about a girl and her mom, single mother, and they inherit this mansion in Northern Ontario that is not as idyllic as it may seem. And then years in the future, an investigative journalist is investigating what happened to her. So it's dual perspective, which I hadn't done before. So that was really exciting for me. And you know, it's got spooky houses. It's got all sorts of nature things. This is my big nature book. Because it's set in Northern Ontario in some wilderness there. Butcher Birds is so very personal in a different way than Blood Like Magic is personal. And I think they're both they have dark themes in them for sure. But they also both have those moments of like levity. And I think they are two very different books, but I think in a way that's still both very much my style. Mm.
Well, I'm in for all the reasons you just mentioned. I love the inherited mansion trope.
Yeah.
Right. So because it's so much fun, and you can just take that. You can go so many different ways with it. And you know, it's like, I'm not a classically thriller guy, but I have been the last few years reading some really good thrillers that I've really found myself enjoying. And so I was like, I'm becoming a thriller fan, but I'm not a classic one. But yeah, that sounds really cool. And
I'm excited about it
because it's
very much got the Hill House complicated family.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Inherited mansion sort of vibe, which I really like. But I've got to do a lot of tropes and twist them, which makes me really happy.
Great. Well, God, it's so far away. I'd be like, I can't wait to read it. And it's just like, I'm going to be, but anyways, yeah. So that's cool. And where are we with Blood Like Magic 2, Even More Blood? That's what I'm calling it. Yeah. Two Blood, Two Magic.
That one is going really well. So we are, I sent off my first edits with my editor. So they're with her now and with a couple of sensitivity readers that are looking over my stuff for me.
Yep.
And yeah, I'm really, really excited about it. There's so many, it's funny because people are always like, book two is hell and you're going to suffer and it's going to be the worst thing. But I finished and I'd been so afraid. And then I was pleasantly surprised by how much I loved it.
Good.
And doing my last edit, I really, really loved it. I think this is such a good journey for Voya. I got to expand on some characters that weren't as prominent in the first book. Keisha, I think, really shines very bright in the sequel. And I had so much fun writing her in this book.
Cool, very cool.
And yeah, I think it's going to be really fun. It's got lots of twists in it. I'm very obsessed with twists, even though I write fantasy. It's not like I'm writing a thriller, but I'm very obsessed with them.
Right.
And so I'm excited about all the ones.
Well, that's really cool because there is some great twists, reveals in book one, which are really cool, which of course we can't talk about, but are very cool at the end. And this ending is the ending in this is fantastic. So I can only assume it's just as good, if not better, for book two. Is it just as beefy? Because this is just shy of 500 pages. I don't know how many words, but probably 100 and some odd.
It's slightly less beefy. I'm a little bit proud of myself.
Okay.
I don't know. We still have maybe one more developmental edit and line edits to go. So who knows? I can add 20,000 words without thinking. That's my horrible special skill. So quite beefy, but slightly less. I think it's
beefy.
Maybe 50 pages less.
Oh, okay. So not much. Okay. Good.
It's still talky, but not as much.
And you're happy that you've been able to tell this story in two books?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
It is a complete circle duology.
Without having to sacrifice anything or leave anything out.
Yeah, and I had always imagined it as two books. Okay. I never even thought of a trilogy. When I decide that I'm writing a series, I pretty much decide from the beginning how many books it's going to be. So, you know, like when I wrote Butcher Birds, I was like one book. And when I wrote Blood Like Magic, I was like two books and maybe spinoffs. We'll see.
Oh, there's definitely a few spinoff options in there for sure. If you ever can.
There are options.
Yes. So that means everyone will just have to buy the shit out of this book and then they won't, and then they'll be begging you for more. So, June 15th, what do you got planned? I don't know when this is going to air. It might be airing after, but let's talk about it anyways. What do you got planned for launch day?
So none of my stuff is confirmed with the exception of doing an event with Sasha and Serena on the Saturday of that week.
Okay.
I am going to do something for launch. I think it's going to be on YouTube. And then...
You'll update your website, I assume.
Yeah, I'll post it all over social media. There will be something else on the 18th. But nothing is confirmed.
Okay.
I'm not on top of it as Sasha's three.
they're good. Yeah, they're ready. They got a great... Well, you're involved with one of their events. And they got Danielle and Bethina. They got a really great, great few events planned with some great Absolutely. People like yourself. LizelleSanbury.ca is a good place to find out all these launch events details, social media, obviously, Twitter, Instagram. So check those out we're still a few weeks away here. But once you get closer to June 15th, make sure everyone check those out so they can find out exactly where Lizelle is going to be and who she's going to be talking to. Lizelle, thank you so much. There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Lizelle for taking the time to chat. I'm such a huge fan of this book, so it was a real treat for me. I just know Lizelle has set herself on a journey now with this book and will be around for as long as she wants to be. It's that good. Blood Like Magic is out now, so head on over to LizelleSanbury.ca or anywhere else books are sold to get your hands on a copy as soon as possible. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to CineLinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.